Counselor Eby. And do you want? Okay. And do we have somebody there for Elliott Park?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. Joseph Horry for Ms. Elliott Park.
We thought you were there. We see you now. What time is it in Saipan?
It's about 6:30 in the morning.
Well, you look remarkably
awake.
Awake. Much better than I would look at that time. Appellant being right, so this is Mr. Huseman goes first. Now, I don't know if you're going to be able to see Mr. Huseman. Is he going to be able to see Mr. Huseman? Yes. Well, step to the lectern and proceed. You don't need to stand there if you don't want to, Mr. Hoy, if you can see the video by sitting down, you can go ahead and sit. I just want to make sure you were there.
Okay? That's fine. I'm here, Your Honor.
Okay. Very good.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Braddock J. Huseman. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, and I represent the Department of Public Safety police officers who are involved in this lawsuit. This is a qualified immunity interlocutory appeal stemming from the district court's denying my client's request to dismiss the equal protection and conspiracy claims contained within her lawsuit. I have 2 points I would like to make today on oral argument. The first is that Ms. Park Elliott received the constitutional rights she was entitled to. She received police protection. She was an accident victim.
Well, they did respond. All right. It wasn't a situation where they said, you go 911, what's your ethnicity? Oh, sorry, we're not coming. Okay. So we don't have that going on. They came out to the scene.
Yes, Your Honor.
But you do have a situation here where everyone seems to say that this Mr. Babalta, is that how we say it?
Babalta, yes, Your Honor.
That he's drunk. A lot of people say he's drunk, including the doctor that doesn't have a dog in the fight.
Yes.
And the officers say he had not been drinking. So I guess, assuming that they did respond, but why isn't it a violation of the plaintiff's right to equal protection when the police refused to investigate his sobriety because of Barbalta's ethnicity?
All right, Your Honor. I would say that the police did investigate the sobriety. They chose not to arrest. I understand, Your Honor.
He said he had not been drinking.
When you say investigate, they gave him a touch-your-nose test?
No, I don't believe they did. I believe
Did they investigate by making him walk the line?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so.
Did they investigate by smelling his breath?
I believe that did happen, Your Honor.
Did they investigate by taking a blood test?
No, Your Honor.
Urine sample?
No, Your Honor.
Breathalyzer?
No, Your Honor. Under Commonwealth law, it is permissible for the arresting officer, if he chooses to arrest, to testify. All those requirements wouldn't be needed if there's probable cause, and Ms. Park alleges there was probable cause to arrest this individual. If there's probable cause under Commonwealth law, the police officer can testify in open court from his experience that individual was drunk.
And but so, they said he wasn't, and there's a whole lot of people that say he had been drinking.
That's
so
true, Your Honor.
They didn't give him a ticket.
No, they didn't.
So they would never be called upon to say one way or the other.
Exactly, Your Honor. And our point is that there is, once the police arrive and show up and do a preliminary investigation, it is still within their discretion whether to arrest or not. Now, the facts of this case, they're taken as true.
What if we pull out a tape and then they're saying to Barbalta, you know, because you are one of us, we're going to let you go. Would that change the facts?
Well, I don't think it would, Your Honor, because that isn't discrimination against her. That's discrimination in favor of somebody else. So they're not doing it because she is, I believe she's Korean. for the purpose of this, we'll assume she is.
Oh, but are those really different claims? Aren't they flip sides of the same coin?
Like, I would concede they could be flip sides of the same coin, but I would also concede that if I'm trying to do you a favor, that is not necessarily racial animus towards somebody else. In other words...
So you feel in the sort of old South, and, you know, you find that your buddy, you know, your second cousin, thrice removed, happened to run over this black guy, and you say, well, I'm going to let you go because you're one of us.
Well, and that's...
That's okay. I mean, that's not racial animus. That's just being sort of...
I would say that first of all, is not okay. But I would also say that...
I'm not asking for...
Sure.
Moral approval here.
Sure.
We're talking about equal protection.
Right.
So when I say okay,
right.
I'm really limiting it. No, nobody says any of this is
right.
That's okay.
Is it
conceivable that there could be a constitutional right, that a person could be denied equal protection on a failure to investigate? Or, I mean, we know we have cases where they're denied police services or denied protective services. And this is not necessarily that case. But is it conceivable to you that there could be a right to have the police, you know, equally investigate cases and not deny that because of your ethnicity?
Sure. I think there are cases like that. I think...
Was that a clearly established right?
No, I don't believe... In this case, no, I don't believe so. And I believe this case is on two levels. First of all, I don't believe that is the case because there is that established right when the police officers are tacitly allowing that kind of violence. And when the police officers know, in most of these cases, we'll see there's a group, either women in the domestic violence case or some minority, that there's violence committed against those individuals. And the police are either allowing it or tacitly acknowledging it and are not stopping it. And certainly if there's not an investigation, that is a problem. There's a disconnect here in that...
Well, the right that she's trying to say is, as a Korean, I have a right. I don't have a right for the police being perfect, but I have a right to have my case investigated just like an ethnic native or whatever.
Sure. She has a right to... I believe that when the police show up and they do... They do the interviews and they perform whatever tasks they're doing, that generally you do have a right to that sort of investigation. Now, if in this case it's alleged that the police just wrote down that she wasn't drinking, or that Mr. Bravato wasn't drinking, but I don't think that there's a disconnect because of what we're talking about. There's not violence committed against any individual. This is a random traffic accident. So if the court goes with that kind of analysis, if there's a fender bender...
That doesn't really quite wash. I mean, let's say, for example, they passed a law. So it's not clear what's going on. You know, anybody who's of a certain ethnicity, and that's a Chamorro in this case, but you know, you could pick whatever, who runs a red light will not be prosecuted.
Okay.
It's illegal to run a red light unless you happen to be, you know,
right.
White or black or Chamorro, you know, whatever.
And
so what that does is it makes it more dangerous for everybody else to go through green lights, because you never know when some guy is going to run a red light with impunity.
I understand.
Why is this very much the same kind of thing? They're saying, look, we are in danger, we're running the highways, all these guys are running around driving recklessly, and the police have a policy of not enforcing the law as to them, which encourages them to drink and drive. And I mean, apparently the guy wasn't just drunk. He was, from all accounts, he was a real menace on the road.
I don't dispute any of that. I would say, and this is the difference.
Have the officers been disciplined?
That's not in the record. It's outside. But I believe one of them is, at least two of them, I think all three of them are no longer with the force. One of them is now in Rota. and one is in Seattle, and I'm not, I think the other one is on Saipan, but not employed anymore. But I could be wrong about that. It isn't in the record, and I might be mistaken.
Were they fired?
I believe that to be the case.
Are they not there because they were fired? Or
I believe that is the case.
Did they just get better jobs?
No. Well, no, I don't believe they got better jobs. Well, they might have now, but they I believe they were let go. To answer your question, I think that it gets to who's the proper plaintiff. In that case, there are individuals, whoever the disfavored minority there. So I would be a disfavored minority because I'm not a local. If I'm getting arrested for driving through a red light in your scenario, well, then my liberty interest is at stake. And the only reason I was pulled over...
I'd be a lot more worried about my life interest being at stake by being the guy who drives through the green light and gets hit.
Sure.
By somebody who knows he's not going to get into trouble if he runs a red light.
Right.
That would be...
I agree with that, Your Honor. But what I would just say is that I believe there are proper plaintiffs, and in that case, there are individuals who didn't get a correct investigation. Isn't the proper plaintiff. The person who gets, there is a proper plaintiff in Ms. Park's complaint. It's the individual later that night who was arrested. He was not a person of Northern Mariana's descent. That takes care of this. That person's liberty interest was taken away.
That one's an obvious one, but there's a less obvious problem here. And that is that the population generally has not been given the protection to which they are entitled under the law, at least with respect to CNMI drivers. So if you have CNMI drivers who are drunk, then the public has been deprived of a public good on the basis of for racial reasons.
And I would in which case,
what I think your real argument is, Ms. Park is only part of a larger group and doesn't have any more standing than anybody else.
Anybody else.
Hasn't been targeted by this.
That's correct, Your Honor. And to get back to Judge Callahan's question, I wanted, because I'm almost out of time, I just wanted to cover something. If you believe this to be established right, the case law in the United States is from about the early 80s on, is quite replete with cases just like this, where there's a due process lawsuit instead of an equal protection lawsuit, and the police officers come across a drunk individual, they do an investigation, they decide that person either isn't drinking or they're not going to do anything about it. They let that person go. He gets in an accident a mile down the road, kills two people in a family of four, and that those injured people sue the government. And what we have, and then the courts uniformly have held that isn't a due process clause. Now,
that's DeShaney, right?
Pardon?
That's DeShaney.
That is DeShaney. And what Ms. Park is trying to do is circumvent the rule in DeShaney, which is that the Constitution is not a minimum guarantee of rights between citizens. It's the government telling the Constitution protects the citizens from the government, not citizens from citizens. So in those cases, you have causation. In this case, you have no causation. The police officers would have been reasonable in believing that if they are at a roadside stop, they come across Mr. Babauta and let him go, there wouldn't be any liability. In this case, we're trying to attach liability to them after the fact, when there is no causation, and that's why I say...
But there are concerns she has are implicated. If you are involved in that kind of accident, and you then go to sue, it's a big help if the guy on the other side gets charged with drunk driving. Your recovery is bigger. If he's insured, you get less of a fight from the insurance company. If he's not insured and has assets, I have no idea what the story is in this case.
Sure.
But you have a much easier time recovering in a civil lawsuit if the police do what they're supposed to do, which is to identify, they're on the scene, they have the tools available to identify whether somebody is a drunk driver or not, and to bring the legal process to bear to not just have people be witnesses of it, but actually convict him of the crime. And if he gets convicted of drunk driving growing out of that incident, that is a big plus in terms of time and amount of recovery and litigation. So why isn't that enough? of an interest that Ms. Park has to say she, you know, she is a proper plaintiff to bring this case?
I think that's an interest. I don't think that that rises what happened to a constitutional.
No, we're talking standing now. We're not talking
constitutional. Okay, back on standing.
We're talking standing.
That is, I would say that is, she has that, but she doesn't have any more need than any other individual who's injured in an accident. And you get an fender bender, it's the same problem. You get the ticket issued in your name. You know, if the other person who's at fault gets the ticket, it's easier too. So if the cops, you know, the police officers show up to any accident and don't issue the ticket, every time they don't issue a ticket and there's probable cause to do it, well, that's a constitutional lawsuit waiting in the entire Ninth Circuit. And I guess the court is free to do that. I'm not sure that's. I don't believe that that rises. I don't
your
think
that's. Your argument here is it's not clearly established, and so under what Pearson v. Callahan, you can dispose of it under the second prong.
I think you could dispose of it under the second prong,
but
or the first.
But we could also still find a clearly established right at this point and go forward.
Yes, Your Honor. But I would say that under either the prong, my argument is that under either the prongs, it qualified immunity. They're entitled to qualified immunity on either of the prongs. And I know I'm over, so I don't.
Okay, thank you. We'll hear from the opposing counsel. Mr. Rory?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Joseph Rory, representing the plaintiff and appellee, H.R. Park Elliott. Can you hear me clearly?
No problem at all.
Okay. First of all, I would point out that we're here on an appeal from the denial of a motion to dismiss. At this stage of the proceedings, we take the allegations in the complaint as true. I point that out particularly because most of the cases that have been cited by both parties in this matter, particularly ones where claims like my clients have been rejected, have been decided at the summary judgment stage where there's a requirement of some evidentiary production that we don't have at this point. For the purposes of this appeal, then, at this stage, we take it as true that the driver was drunk, there was pervasive evidence that he was drunk, that not only was he not arrested, but the ordinary investigative steps that would, according to the regular police procedure, have been done in that situation were not done. In one instance, even evidence was, a report was falsified, and that this was done intentionally, that it was, the reason it was done was because of racial discrimination and or an invidious, irrational class of one discrimination. All that is taken as true.
Counsel, is it found within your complaint that you allege that Ms. Park was discriminated against because of her race?
We allege both, Your Honor, that she was discriminated because of her race and because of the race of the other driver.
Okay, so your part of your allegation is that the police didn't charge this because she was Korean.
Yes, that is part of the complaint. And it is.
Do you see those claims as different? The claim that they disfavored her because she's Korean, as opposed to the claim that they favored him because he is Chamorro.
No, I'm inclined to see it as Your Honor expressed it earlier, as the flip side, two sides of the same coin. I suppose those two sides converge in this situation. Maybe you have a case of double discrimination, discrimination in both directions. It might be possible to have one and not the other under different facts. But in this case, we have both.
You are alleging both.
We are alleging both.
Okay.
Mr. Hoy, I have a question. It seems to me that you weren't denied police services. What you were denied was police investigation services. They did respond. They took everyone to the hospital. They did all of that. Can you cite me a case that clearly establishes the right for provision of police investigation services on a non-discriminatory basis?
I can, Your Honor. There are several cases that we cited in our brief. There's a Hawk v. Perillo. There's a Roman v. City of Reading. Smith v. Gilpin, County, Colorado. There was the Modi case in the District of New Jersey.
It doesn't seem to be exactly on point, though. They don't seem to be exactly on point.
Well, in all of those cases, Your Honor, the allegation was the same as in this complaint, that the police discriminated in their investigative response. It wasn't, I know we've had other cases here in the Ninth Circuit, I think the Navarro and Ballesteri and some others, where the police failure was before the fact, that they didn't protect somebody before something happened. This is, at the other end, this is after the fact. These are all after the fact investigative cases.
Let's narrow this a little bit. I'm assuming that you would concede that there's no established right that someone can tell the police how to do all stages of their investigation.
Correct. I would agree with that.
All right. And there wouldn't be no clearly established right that someone's prosecuted, because once you get to the prosecutors and they decide whether they charge someone or not, the prosecutors are entitled to absolute immunity, right?
Yeah, we don't claim any absolute right to prosecution or to an arrest or even an absolute right to an investigation. The only right that we claim here is a right to equal treatment, to equal protection, that the police do in this situation the same as what they would do for anyone else, absent invidious discrimination in this situation on these facts.
But how? But police don't have to do the investigation exactly the same each time. I mean, there could be cases where they wouldn't need to take a test, or I think as the appellant has argued, they could ascertain, say perhaps as a point of judgment, that yes, the person was drunk, they were falling down, there were a number of people there that saw them drunk, and they could all testify at trial, and they could make a determination that they felt that was sufficient. So, you know, I mean, I'm trying to decide here, you know, how do we define what this right is? Since you can't, you know, I think we agree that you can't tell the police how to do every investigation. They're entitled to manage their investigations and have some deference on that. And then at the other extreme, we would probably all agree that they can't come out there. If they had come out there and said, oh, Mrs. Park, you're Korean, and Mr. Barbota is a native here, we don't investigate crimes like that because you're Korean. All right, but we've got something kind of in between here, and because the officers are idiots and they don't do, or they're lazy and they don't do what they have to do, that therein doesn't make a constitutional violation. So I'm trying to find, you know, what is this clearly established right to police investigations? How do you define it? And what case do we have out there that would have told the officers that they had to take a blood test?
Your Honor, I don't think we're so much between those two extremes as that we're a whole lot closer to the second example that Your Honor mentioned, of the officers coming out and saying, and I think the difference is they didn't say it out loud, that we're not going to investigate this because of who you are and because of who he is. They didn't come out and say that out loud, and that's the only difference. That is essentially what happened. That is the decision that they made, and that is the reason for which they made it. And I think that is the end of the spectrum at which the allegations in this case fall. And so the right that we're asserting there is not necessarily to an investigation.
There was another accident where they did investigate. Is that how we know that?
That is one part of the larger picture, Your Honor. Yes, it's not. I can't say that one accident all by itself doesn't establish it. But the allegation in the complaint is that is the reason that there was intentional racial and irrational discrimination in this case, and that is the point at which we think the constitutional right kicks in. Is that you don't have that intentional discrimination is a clearly established violation of the Equal Protection Clause. I think that's what this court has held. It was the Flores v. Pierce. This court held that the right to be free from racial discrimination is so well established, so essential to the preservation of our constitutional order, that public officials must be charged with knowledge of it. And I think not only are they charged with knowledge of it, it's in their own code of conduct, that they must be strictly impartial towards all persons, whether suspects, victims, all persons coming to their attention. There's to be no favoritism, no racial or national origin discrimination in any of the provision of their services, whether investigative or arresting or whatever they undertake in the course of their duty as police officers. It's all to be undertaken with strict impartiality. That is clearly established in their own code. It's clearly established in the law of the circuit as well.
I'm trying to imagine what this case would look like at the summary judgment stage if we get that far. In a complaint you can allege racial animus in the abstract. And I'm still trying to find, I've got the complaint in front of me, I can't find the exact paragraph where you have that allegation. Maybe you can give it to me at some point. But I guess you can allege it. I don't even quite know whether that's a factual allegation or it's a factual. You're alleging something about what's going on. Is your position that this is a policy of the police department there, or is it the D.C. particular officer were acting with this animus, or which is it?
It's both, Your Honor. We've alleged that the particular officers were acting with this animus. We've also alleged there's a policy in the police department.
So you have essentially a Monell claim?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Okay, now, I'm sorry, the policy of the police department is not to arrest people who have injured Koreans or not to arrest people who are natives of CNMI?
I don't know that we go so far as to call it a policy, Your Honor, but that it is there's a pervasive practice in any event. That let me, if you could give me a second to find the allegation. I think it is that it's not specific to Koreans.
If the problem is that native police officers will not arrest natives of CNMI, then how does Mrs. Park distinguish her claim to equal protection from every other citizen on the island? They don't arrest this guy. They put him back out on the road. He's a danger to everybody on the road, and he doesn't discriminate between Koreans and native drivers. And so why isn't her claim then indistinct from everybody else in the Commonwealth?
Because she, in that instance, was the victim of the accident and the victim of the crime. She's a person to whom the protection of the laws runs at that moment.
Yeah, but there's no evidence that he was stopped earlier in the night and then let go. They put him back on the road,
right.
She's unhappy about that. She isn't in any more danger from him than everybody else that's back on the road.
Well, this is not a put him back on the road situation, Your Honor. There's no allegation, and we have no indication that he was ever stopped by anybody prior to this incident.
You are claiming that she was denied a public good, and
yes.
The public good is the protection because of the racial identity of the perpetrator.
Yes.
If that's true, then I'm still trying to figure out how her claim is distinct from the claim of every other person on the island.
I would say because in this case she was the one that he hit. She was the one that was the victim of the accident.
That's in the past. That's a sunk cost.
Right. That's happened. That has happened. But at that point, she's the person entitled to the protection of the laws. And the protection of the laws in this instance is not limited to just protecting you beforehand from something, to prevent something from happening to you. I think when we look at the DeShaney's term of police protective services or the constitutional language itself, protection of the laws protect us not just by being on the books. The laws protect us by being enforced. And so if the law against theft is not enforced against the man who steals from me, if the law against assault is not enforced, if there's no investigation of someone who beats me up, or if there is no, I'm not protected by the law against theft. I'm not protected by the law against assault.
You didn't like my theory, eh?
Excuse me?
You wouldn't like my theory that by not investigating, they made it more difficult for her to sue, and that's how she has a particularized interest.
Well, that's true. I admit I hadn't thought of that, but that is. I mean, that does give her additionally.
It's optimistic.
Particular, right? And individual to her. That's individual to her. I do agree with that.
I'm glad. I've managed to persuade you. It took two tries, but I knew I could get there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
you're out of time, unless there are other questions. And the PM after me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Would you like to take a minute for rebuttal? Go ahead.
As the court hit upon, I just want to make a few quick points, and I think the court acknowledges that a difference in degree at some point will become a difference in kind. We would submit that this isn't. This case, as it was pled, isn't close to the cases that were cited by appellees. This is close to the Luini case. And that if the court goes, or if the court decides that an individual is entitled to, if there's no causation, just like there is here, that every time there's an accident, the police show up, if they decide not to ticket, if they decide not to arrest some individual, ticket, whatever it is. It's true that person, if there's a fender bender, will not get the benefit of that ticket.
There's a flip side of this. I understand your concern about the floodgates and all those things, but let's say they're right. Let's say that plaintiff is right. And in fact, I mean, I don't know. I've been to CNMI only very briefly, to Saipan only very briefly. And very nice place, but I have no idea about the police practice or anything else. But let's say they're right. Let's say, in fact, there is a unwritten policy or a practice for them to go light on wrongdoers dealing traffic matters that happen to be of concern. That's really a terribly serious charge. And can we really dismiss something like that at the 12B stage, at the motion to dismiss stage, without allowing them? What if they have a pile of evidence that they come up with, case after case, instance after instance, where exactly the same thing happens? They do this after some discovery, and they find out. It's not. Saipan is not that big a place, as I recall, and the list of cases is probably not that long. And let's say they come up with 20 or 25 cases where exactly the same thing happened over the course of 5 years. We would be remiss if we let this go and didn't give them the chance to come up with that kind of evidence. I mean, this is the kind of thing that if it is going on, needs to stop. It needs to be put an end to.
I agree that if this thing is going on, I would dispute that it is. But if this is going on, I agree that it would need to stop. But I would also point out to the court there is a proper plaintiff in all these cases. It isn't Ms. Park. It's the people who are losing their freedom, whatever liberty interest they have when the laws are being improperly enforced against them. Those are the proper plaintiffs, not Ms. Park.
You know, I've heard you say that two or three times now, but it seems to me those are the weakest people, because they, you're going to come back and say, quite rightly, listen, what have you got to complain about? Were you drunk driving? Yes. Were you speeding? Yes. So what cause do you have to complain about the fact that somebody else, we went some easier, somebody else? You're the last person to complain because you deserve to be punished. But there's nothing that Ms. Park did that has involved any fault on her part at all. You can't say, well, you can't complain because you are just as guilty or just as much fault. All she was doing is driving down a highway, minding her own business, as best as the record shows, staying within the speed limit and driving in a safe manner. And this guy crosses the median and slams her head on. So why is the guy who later on that evening does the same thing as Mr. Barbauta, drives home young. Why is he a better plaintiff? In what sense is he a better plaintiff?
He's only a better plaintiff in that he actually has damages. There's causation there. In other words...
But there's no causation at all. He's not in any way impacted by the discriminatory policy. They enforce the law as to him the way the law is supposed to be enforced. He's got no beef. He's got no congressional beef. And by God, he should not get any relief at all. I mean, he should... You know, whatever they do to drunk drivers, you know, suspend his license or send him to jail, you know, whatever it does, and he has no cause to complain. It seems to me that if anybody has a cause to complain, it is either Ms. Park, who was actually injured, or maybe the rest of the citizens of the island who are put at risk by this policy that exists.
Well, I will say that that I understand the court's point, and I do understand that the individual who was arrested later that night is, you know, isn't
he got what he was coming
for. I completely agree that he got what was coming to him, but
you also have to agree that if you were had been let's not make it personal, but some reasonable person in Ms. Park's position who gotten hit by a drunk driver, and she sees the police coddling that person. He's got a doctor who says, look, this guy is really drunk. The police have to do something. And the police say, oh, no, you know, he's not, you know, it's fine, don't worry about it. We're letting him go. That she would have, I mean, whether she has a legal claim or not, and whether it's probably, she would have a good, legitimate claim to be really unhappy about that. That person...
I completely...
Whereas the guy who gets stopped 2 hours later driving drunk has no legitimate beef at all.
I would agree with you that any Ms. Park or anyone else on the facts alleged has a legitimate reason to be angry. I would also say that they aren't injured in any real sense. There isn't any benefit that has been denied Ms. Park that wasn't owed her, and I think the court understands. I'm not trying to say that
she was denied a good investigation.
She was denied a good investigation, and if the court,
which would have helped her in her civil case,
I agree it would have helped, but I don't believe that the denying of a good investigation that helps in a civil case is enough to trigger the Constitution, U.S. constitutional protections, and. With that, I know I'm over again, so I don't
know. All right, thank you. Case is stands submitted. I think you haven't tried to settle this case without success.
We did try to settle the case over the Ninth Circuit mediation, and Ms. Park is very unhappy.
There you are, both of you.
There we are. Okay, thank you. Case is stands submitted.